Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Ellen Foundation's Unheard Voices. I'm your host, Pam Price. I am so sorry for those of you who tuned in a little bit earlier for the show. We were just having some technical difficulties, and it's a blessing that we still had studio time to come back and present this really important conversation on gun violence in our community, well, across America. And with so many things that are happening, the crises that are happening, and then, of course, we're adding gun violence in as a part of it, I wanted to have this show because it affects everyone, be it close or be it far from you. So let me just share a little bit. It's gun violence in America is every day more than 100 Americans are killed with guns, and 200 more are shot and wounded. And the effects of gun violence extend far from beyond these casualties. I'm sorry, I can't talk here. And as I said earlier, gun violence shapes our communities, and it breaks so many families' hearts. And today, I have a special co-host who is no stranger to gun violence at his doorstep. And this brother is just such an amazing person in what he's done with what happened with the gun violence that came across his family. He's my co-host today. He's the executive director of Daryl Harrison, the Second Crime Victims Foundation. Please join and welcome my co-host today, Mr. Daryl Harrison. Thank you so much, Daryl, for joining.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you so much for having me. I've been so busy with dealing with gun violence and doing my live stream television show that I haven't done an interview in quite a while.
You know, stranger to Unheard Voices, and you got this in the bag, and we're just gonna have a conversation. So, first, let me just share, family. If you want to join the conversation, please dial in 914-219-0892. Again, join the conversation at 914-219-0892. So, Daryl. You know where I'm going to go. Always love to start with, especially with people that have start organizations that have come from their heartbreak. So if you don't mind, let's talk about your story. So why don't you go on and share it? Take your time as you share the story, because I know it's been a minute since you shared it. And then let's talk about how you've taken that and turned it around into something great where it turns around and it's helping others.
Awesome. I mean, you would think, you know, it's been 4 years now since I lost my son, Daryl Allen Hurston II. And you would think that, you know, everything, you know, like you said, it become natural, used to, but the pain and the grief and the bitterness of the anger remains the same. You know, it happened on March the 4th of 2016. 2016, you know, my son came home from work. He left out with a group of friends of his, and they went out and said they were going to play some basketball. So, you know, we was in the house just chilling, and he called and said, Dad, I'm up here at America's Best Wings. Do you want anything to eat? And I was like, nah, son, I'm okay. We just got something to eat anyway. I said, I'll see you when you get here. 15 minutes go by, and my cousin called me, and she, you know, we answered the phone, and she's screaming, hey, Daryl, Tina, little Daryl been shot. Mm-hmm. And he's at Southern Maryland Hospital. And, you know, and I'm like, what? You know, we all screaming and hollering because getting that call that your child been shot due to the violence, due to the gun violence today, is devastating. It was one of my worst fears. You know, I think about Job when Job said the thing that he had feared the most had come to light. And this has come to light because I always tell my son since he was born and since he'd been in school, son, no guns, stay away from people, do this, do that, don't go to clubs. And I get this call, and I'm like, oh, my God. So, you know, my thought is, where have you been shot at? And, you know, he was at American Best Wings. Why was he the shot? Did he lie to me? So, you know, we rushed out of here and threw on whatever we could throw on, and we rushed down to Southern Maryland Hospital. And we arrived at Southern Maryland Hospital, and I go up to the desk, and I let them know my son, Darrell Hurst, had been boarding here. He was shot. So while we was there, well, practically on the way down, we got a call from my cousin who was with him. And he said he started crying. They shot him in the head. Uncle Darrell, they shot him in the head. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my wife broke down, and she was like, shot my baby in the head. And, you know, and I'm saying to myself, a gun wound is hard, but at this time, I'm like, come on, God, I'm going to need you. So when we get in the hospital, you know, they got us waiting the doctor come out and talk to us. And the doctor explained to us my son's wound. My son was shot in the head with a 9-millimeter bullet that went through his head, causing two holes. And, you know, it went through, and it was torn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the doctor explained, you know, don't too many people recover from this type of gun wound. But, you know, I'm trusting God. God, come on.
I need my son.
So,
Darrell, let me, and I know the story, but I just, and I'm sorry that we're just reliving this, but, and I'm a firm believer, as I said earlier, is that God is taking your pain and created something, yours and Tina's pain, and created something really magnificent out because of it, and because people who have experienced this, you know, a lot of times they don't know where to turn to. So I just want to jump back into parts of the story because share how the shot, you know, how your son became shot, because I believe that there's another piece in here that you shared before about him going out the door and someone coming in. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, after the process of going through the hospital and things, you know, I didn't know what happened. I don't know if the store was robbed. All I was heard by friends was this guy was going out the store and Darrell was coming in the store.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy came back in 58 seconds firing the gun in the store at some other boys that he felt looked at him the wrong way. And while he firing at them, Darrell was standing in that pathway where a ricochet bullet hit him. Nobody else was hit but Darrell. He wasn't in the store, had nothing to do with it. And, you know, just to hear this was very disturbing. It was like, wow, you know, my son was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But me, I said the person was in the wrong place. He was doing something wrong at the wrong time, shooting his gun. And that wasn't good. You don't shoot a gun in a crowded store.
No.
And I had to accept this, that my son is gone due to the fact that someone else's anger or issues. You know, you come find in a crowded store some other boys, you know, and the process of it was just wild with the court. It was just devastating. This family treated us as though we'd done something wrong to them. You know, it was your child that shot my child. Nobody never apologized. His brother was the only one to apologize to the family, but his mother, his father, nobody apologized. Their family was looking for mercy when our family was looking for justice.
And that's a hard place to be in because you're dealing with all these things that are happening. And right now you just don't, I mean, and we just have real talk here. You know, we just don't feel like, you know, extending the grace and the mercy right now because your heart is broken.
Yes, I mean, I went through a lot of channels of pain and grief that I never experienced. I end up with panic attacks and anxieties. I couldn't close the door behind me no more.
Really?
That I never, I would go take in my office where I worked at, and they'd shut the door. And I'll start having a panic attack. And I always felt as though when I hear about people having panic attacks, I'm like, wow, is that real? But it was real to me because the doctor explained to me that I was itching real bad. Pam, I was itching real bad. And I couldn't understand, like, wait a minute, I'm taking a bath. I'm cleaning myself. Why am I itching like this? And I went to the doctor, and the doctor said that I was filled with so much stress that it was coming out of me. And I was on medication. I had to put on medication. I couldn't sleep no more at night because all I can picture was my son who was laying there when I walked in the room. His whole face and head was bandaged. Only his right eye was visible, and his right eye was open, staring backwards. And when I go to sleep, that's all I can picture. And I just couldn't sleep no more. Knowing that thing, you know, it was a battle of God. Why my child? Why him? You know, so I was on medication for 6 months. I was homicidal for 6 months. I wanted to destroy him and his family. I mean, it was an emotional roller coaster ride and still is today with mixed emotions about doing the right thing because that was my only son, and he was 20 years old, and I had three daughters. I love all my kids, but, you know, to get that son is a great thing. You know, you meet people who got four and five sons. I had three daughters and one son, and so this really bothered me for a while where I was out of work. I was on family leave for 6 months, going to see therapists and counseling, and I was on a medication that had me staring out the window. Just looking at things, I wasn't me. Attacks in my sleep. I would wake up out of my sleep and I'd jump out the bed and I'd run out the room because for some reason I kept feeling like everything was closing in on me. I didn't know what it was until, you know, the doctors explained it to me that the stress that I have taken on another level because it was just a journey. Your child was shot, he's dead, you're dealing with your wife. Me and my wife stayed up for 8 days straight, no sleep.
Wow.
I was drinking 2 to 3 bottles of wine a day just to
self-medicate. So, family, I'm all about statistics and just trying to understand, you know, how did we get here? So, as Gerald mentioned that his son was 20, so just in looking at the numbers here, it says firearms are the leading cause of death for American children and teens, young adults. More than 1,700 children and teens die by gun homicide every year. Yeah. For children under the age of 13, these gun homicides most frequently occur within the home and often are connected to domestic violence. Or domestic or family violence. Now, African-American children and teens are fourthly than white children and teens of the same age to die by gun homicide. That's a big number.
It is. You know, now that I do what I do with my foundation and I fight gun violence all over, wherever I can reach out to about gun violence. Like I said, now I'm in my third year of my radio show, and at this point now of being in my third year, I have reached out to families all over the world who have lost their kids to gun violence to try to help them to find some ground of peace. And my ground of peace is God. you know, just my faith in him is what helped me to fight this, because, you know, the word said that only God can mend a broken heart.
Absolutely.
And people couldn't understand how, where I was at. But, you know, after seeing him lay there and having the funeral, I just had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said.
So let's talk about your organization, though. So from this, and I apologize, I didn't mean to cut you off in
no problem.
In mid-throwing. Let's talk about your organization. And so we understand the story behind how it started, the reason why. And now here you are with this phenomenal organization. Let's talk more about what you do, and we already know the reason why you started. But so let's talk about how you get in and reach out to families who are struggling.
Well, when I started out, I just had to do something. I was like, it was bothering me. I just could not let my son die for nothing.
Right.
So I just wanted to do a foundation in his name, and I wanted to just do T-shirts. I got T-shirts designed. I got over 15 logo designed T-shirts that talk about gun violence and murder. But then I was asked to do my first speak working through a company called Kathy, who is in Largo, Maryland. And after I did my first speech, a lot of people contacted me after that and wanted to speak with me, and then they wanted me to do other speak. And I was like, okay. So now I'm like, I'm into this. And I'm like, let me help people. And then I threw my first event April the 26th of 2017, which was his birthday. And I threw my first event, and when I threw my first event, it was a great success. And after that, I just started doing events. And people would, I just go to speaking engagement and speak to families and talk to people at, and they would ask me questions afterwards. And then I took on all the contacts that I had when I first started. You know, I had to call a group called Maryland Crime Victim Resource Center. I had to call the Baltimore with the compensation building. All these numbers I kept. And then I said to myself, other people want to need these numbers. Let me help other people. So I kept all these contact numbers. So now people calling me and they're like, what can I do? We don't have insurance. We don't have money to bury them. And I will put them in contact with crime victims office in D.C. or Maryland Crime Victim Center in Maryland. And they will take it from there with them or with funeral home. Mm-hmm. But they can help to help families who didn't have the money to bury a kid. And I will get them counseling. Darrell Harrison Crime Victim Foundation will help assist people to get counseling and therapy through CAPI or through Maryland Crime Victim Resource Center, which was free.
Mm-hmm.
But I will put them in contact.
So if someone reaches out to you that's not in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, are you able to help them or not?
Well, I try to help them by going through my resources. Maryland Crime Victim Resource Center has other centers and other places that they've been in contact. Maryland Crime Victim Resource Center been around for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they have resources other places. So I will call them and I'll ask them, do they have anything that I can do in this city? I have helped families in California. I have helped families all over the place to gun violence. And it's not everywhere that I can help. Only thing that I can do from there is to help by talking to them and just being there for them when they need it. I mean, I got family members that calls me through Messenger and Facebook, and I just sit on the phone with them, and they talk about how it hurts so bad, and I just give them. We just talk. I just talk to them. That's all I do with families that I don't never met. I only meet them on Messenger or Facebook, but I talk to them, to comfort them, and we talk about the word of God, and I pray with them. And that's all I can do for people that I had no resources and they didn't.
Right. Because it is tough, you know, because it's just on the rise, and it's going to continue to rise, you know, throughout you know, our nation. And right now where we are, it's says that 58% of American adults or someone that they care for have experienced gun violence in their lifetime, and approximately 3 million American children witness gun violence every year. So let me ask you this. What are your thoughts like if a young child sees this gun violence, you know, if they are witness to it? I mean, I can't even imagine, like, you've already seen it with your son. How do you think that affects our young people who see this on a more constant or consistent basis?
Well, it's from the experience of with Daryl's friends, you know, they was all in the store. They ducked down, they ran. But now they stopped when they seen Daryl laying in the corner bleeding from the head. They picked him up and grabbed him. They take him in the car. One of the boys that I still talk to today, you know, they was trying to use something to cover the wounds from the blood coming out of his head. So some of them kids, I did end up getting therapy for them.
Mm-hmm.
It is traumatizing. We got kids, like when a young boy, 10-year-old, I can't even get his name up, Brown, last name was Brown, got killed, shot by a grown man over there in Southeast D.C. on Nella Road. Kids were speaking out saying, am I next? Would this happen to me? Because they witnessed and see it. Some kids now that heard gunshots from other people, heard gunshots, are afraid of fireworks now. That's the trauma that it brings to them. They're afraid. I mean, can you imagine how many black communities that lives in a low-income neighborhood with gunfire going off every day and the kids is in the house and mama like, get on the ground, get on the floor, you know?
Wow. Because that becomes a conditioning now, you know,
yeah.
As soon as you hear it, it's like to duck down regardless of where you are. That's something. Wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm seeing. I just spoke with a mother last week on my show, and with her, her daughter was killed 90 days ago. I explained to her that I didn't think she was ready, but I allowed her to want to come and tell her story. And now I'm getting her 3-year-old son counseling. He's 23 years old. He's devastated from losing his sister. I have families who the kids of the victim need therapy. Their father gone. You know, just the kid to see your parent in a casket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Micaiah Wilson, 10-year-old, over in Clay Terrace, walking away from an ice cream truck. You know, guys get out of the car in all black in a low-income neighborhood, and they shooting and with masks on. And there's a bunch of kids out there with ice cream trucks. Can you imagine what they see?
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, kids have strong mental issues today. You like, boy, you ain't got no problem. These kids have strong mental issues coming from many other things, but gun violence. And, you know, and I have to use low income. I don't want to use a project
low income area. Mm-hmm.
In housing area where gun violence is at the most is what youth kids are scared of today. I have a young guy by the name of Tyler Willis about gun violence. He's a great poet. He was just on my show 2 weeks ago. You know, and when you talk to these kids with the parents, I want to do a show on kids. What is your opinion about gun violence? What happened to your dad? Or, you know, when they're ready to talk. And it's trauma. I mean, it's true trauma. My daughters are still taking therapy. Behind losing their brother, you know, and they grown adults.
Yeah.
So just imagine what a child experienced seeing their family. Because, like I said, in certain neighborhoods, kids are there seeing the family member laying down when the gun violence happened in the home. Kids are there. Everybody's trying to cover the kid and move the kid. But this now is something in that child's head.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids are afraid of guns now. Like I said, they're afraid of fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
It will have a different intake. Some kids can grow up bitter and mad and clean the guns behind what they've seen. So, you know, I wrote a small book about that. There's major behavior that kids can grow up with the age of from 3 months and up. And if they're not redirected or changed, that behavior become aggressive. That kid become aggressive. That sooner or later that kid will commit a crime. We just had, I don't know if you heard, Pam, just 2 weeks ago, a 16-year-old boy was in the paper in D.C. This 16-year-old boy committed 9 murders. In D.C. 16. Huh? Okay.
My wife explained to me.
But it was, excuse me, my wife explained to me it was 4. It wasn't 9. My mistake. She had to correct me. But 4 murders.
That's all good.
But he committed 4 murders. When the little young girl got killed on Saratoga Avenue, her mother was a cop. This year, mm-hmm. young kid was 17. He committed 3 murders with the same gun.
Wow.
How do you want to kill at this age? Why do you want to shoot someone? Kids committing violence with 14 years old, 13 years old, firing guns.
You know, I have my personal opinion is, you know, because that is seen so often that people become immune to it. You know, it's like if you're watching like blood and gore like all the time, you know, because and not to blame it on video games, but because you're seeing this all the time, you become so immune to it that it now does not become a problem anymore for you to see it. Like I said, that's my personal opinion. I'm sure there are other people will reach out to me later and just talk about that. But I believe because, you know, it is become such a norm right now to witness, to watch, to see, you know, this happening in the streets constantly, that they become immune to it and it becomes a norm. So I'm in agreement with you on that. So really quick, let's talk about your show and how you've taken, you know, what you do, not only in the foundation, but let's talk about your show that you have.
With my show started out with just interviewing victims of crime, mothers whose daughters was killed by domestic violence, of gun violence. Anyone that had maybe was ready to come on and talk about it. And these families would come on and they would talk about their story, about their child. And I would ask them if they had any counsel or any therapy. Some say they did, but they needed more. And at this time, I would contact these companies. So I had Maryland Crime Victim come on there to interview what they do. They help people of domestic or violent crimes or gun violence. I had mm-hmm. Kathy to come on there. Kathy is Community for Youth and Family Services.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ellen Foundation's done work with them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all these people will come on so I can reach my viewers. And so my viewers on YouTube on Vox Wave start growing. My Facebook page started growing. I got in touch with a company. A group of people named Roberta House called me to come to Baltimore to do a panel with them about gun violence. And I went down there, and I just started growing there. Roberta House, I sent people to get counsel through them. So my thing is that I learned during my show, it was a therapy thing
mm-hmm.
to me. When people come on to talk about their story, they're like, well, are you going to ask me some questions? And I'm like, yes, I will ask questions then and there. But when this family member gets to talking about, like, what I'm doing now, sharing with you, I wouldn't cut them off. I let them stay on the road because
mm-hmm.
the more they're talking about it right there at the show, it's lifting that burden off
that
of
burden
them
off
moment.
Of them. That's
you know, and
correct.
I don't want to cut them off to the point where they, you know, rechange their thoughts. And some of them cry, and we make sure that we have teachers in the studio. I had a pastor in the studio. I had a therapist in the studio where we can comfort this person doing it. And, I mean, I just started interviewing people. I interviewed all types of foundation and programs that can help with gun violence, anybody with victims of crime. I started highlighting people, organizations, and their companies. Chief of Police been on my radio show. Chief
mm-hmm.
Stavinsky here from PG, Chief Peter Newsom. I reached out to the mayor and had senators on my show. And like I say, I'm going on 3 years. And Pam, I never knew what I was doing. I just went out there. And thanks to the grace of God and his glory, he the one that got this going for me. I just do what I do. You know, I'm like you. I get tongue-tied on the show. I've been out for,
but okay, I love it, though, because it's, you know, because it's just the real sincerity in how we're talking. Because, right, because in all honesty, all we're doing is having a conversation and just sharing with our family members who are listening in how they can get help. And I'm like you, you know, this whole thing is just the therapy to help through the journey. And along the way that it, I'm thankful that God has allowed the resources to be a place where people can get healed or know where people can turn to get healed. So and I'm along with you on that.
Well,
you know,
thing I like to explain it, but it become overbearing. You get burned out, you know, just to sit down with other family members to discuss their story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got my story. And I mean, mm-hmm. I met a mother whose daughter was 16 years old, was shot in the head with an AK gun.
Oh, my gosh.
Back in 2008, called the South Capitol Street Massacre. And this mother, I mean, just to hear the stories of their child. I met mothers who never got to see their child because their child was so damaged from the bullets hitting them
mm-hmm.
that they was advised not to look. You know, these things burden you. A father who was looking for his daughter and found out that the boyfriend dumped her in the dumpster, and the dumpster people came in. Now here it is a month later. She was in a landfill, but they never could find her.
I remember that, yeah.
These things grab onto you, and you feel their pain and grief, and you carry their pain and grief. And sometimes you need a relief because you're trying to relieve other people. Even when I was in therapy, I used to ask people, have this ever happened to you before? Because, you know, you always feel like, if this ain't never happened to you, then how are you going to tell me something about it?
Right. How are you going to help? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's how, you know, I look at things. But I guess people can go to school and learn certain things to help comfort people, but I just believe that it should come from experience of it so you can help because the other person knows how you feel. You know, I met a mother who don't want to talk about it at all. Her son was killed 26 years ago in D.C. when D.C. was the murder capital, and she calls him by his number 301.
Wow.
That's what she called her son. Her son was a number then in D.C., he was 301. Still carried a newspaper article in a paper, in a wallet that is completely brown. You know, I met a mother who sleep with her son's picture in the bed. I met a mother who never got to see her son at the hospital. She only got to see him at the mall, at the funeral. It's just, you know, it's just painful. I met a mother who never even went to the funeral.
Right.
And
wow.
Burden.
Yeah, it is, and I'm in agreement with you, and this I don't know if I shared this story with you years you know I'm from the Connecticut area, and years ago a friend of mine she was in a club, and we did not know my another friend. It was three of us that we were really good friends together. And this one particular night, Sissy decided to meet her boyfriend at the club. My other friend and I, we decided we weren't going to go. And come to find out that particular night in the club, her boyfriend was one of the biggest drug dealers in my hometown. We had no idea who this guy was doing this, and he was involved in a domestic violence situation as well. So this one particular night, while they were in the club, that you know, he had people looking for him.
They burst into the club. He grabbed her and used her as a shield.
Wow.
He used her as a shield. And that, oh, my gosh, we were maybe early 20s because she left behind. She had two kids. They were little, and she left behind two kids. So it was early 20s. So and it's amazing, like you said, you never, ever forget these things. My heart was broken for the family. I mean, we grew up with this family. They actually lived right across the street, so we knew the family very closely. But to find out all these things that that happened within the home, like you said, you know, we don't know all of these things that are going on, but because of the trauma, it's very heartbreaking.
It is. It's really, I mean, this is something we're going to carry for the rest of our life. Like I said, I can speak to a mother who lost a kid 30 years ago and then speak to one who lost a kid just a day ago, and the reactions and the emotions are the same.
Exactly the same. Exactly the same. And, you know, you just don't know. So how do we move forward from this? How do we what is your suggestion for families who are looking to number one, heal, and how they can turn around and help others as well? Because we can never have too many people that help each other come out of situations like this, because even though they're the same, they might be a little bit different. And everybody has a story. So what's your suggestion to someone who has, number one, gone through this, and number two, wants to turn around and help? How do you suggest for them to start?
With my experience, like I said, with me, mine is God. I tell people therapists and counselors are okay to talk to, because what you're doing is getting it out of you. The more you talk about it, sometimes you get it out of you. I have met family that don't even talk about it at all. They don't even want to discuss it.
Wow.
So, you know, my thing is God is my greatest strength when it comes to me overcoming this. I mean, a lot of people don't believe in God. A lot of people don't see it. I mean, it's painful. It's not easy to get this pain off of you. And some people struggle with it, and they struggle with it for years. I met mothers who have lost their kids that stayed on the couch, said they just laid there for 2 years doing nothing but sobbing, didn't go to work or anything. And so now some of them I have met, and I'm thankful that God has given me the gift, because I even though my child was killed, and even when I work with people, and I try to get people to understand it. With this pain and grief I carry, I am in between sanity and peace. I'm in between sanity and peace. And at any moment of time, I can lose it. You know, we can hear a song, we can start crying. We can see a picture of them, we can start crying. And we just lose it. Some people have become angry. Now, I got a mother, not to redirect this. I got a mother who shot the boy who got her son killed at the prison. This is what she did. And I told her I could not condemn her. She wanted to come to my son. I said, don't be ashamed. You did what other mothers wanted to do. And she went to jail, Pam, and did 9 years for shooting that boy. And he's in a wheelchair. He didn't die. She shot him, but he's in a wheelchair. And so these are these mothers' reactions. So now I'm meeting mothers who want to do programs and name them after their kids. And I try to help them organize, get that together by also calling you, because you have so much knowledge in setting up foundations. And I met a mother. She wanted to have one called a mother's pain. I met one that wanted to have a mother brokenhearted. I met a father stabbed up. He was stabbed. He got killed. And he wanted to do something, though his son was transgender. So some people can do this and some can't. Everybody can't do it, because
everyone can't do it.
No, because
like you said earlier, because you're carrying someone else's pain along with yours.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know for myself and like with yourself as well, that this has, you know, this is has a healing process. And, you know, and through God's grace, he has allowed our organization, our ministry, to be a resource tool to help others to get healed. So I'm thankful that, you know, the journey that we went through allows us to turn around and help others. So, and it's hard. It's hard work. It's very, very hard work. I'm not going to lie. You know, there are nights when I've been up, you know, just like, Lord, how am I going to do this? How am I going to, you know, get you know, reach out to these families of domestic violence mm-hmm. and all these things, and you carry their burden. And so for me, I will say, you know, for number one, I don't want to deter anyone from you know, doing what they yeah. feel in their heart is right. That, mm-hmm. That's one thing. Number two, I just suggest that, you know, if you want to turn around and begin to create an organization or some type of foundation to help others, I strongly suggest that you seek God's guidance and mm-hmm. that you surround yourself with like-minded people, because if you don't surround yourself with like-minded people, what will happen is that what you believe that God is giving to you to do will now begin to change to what someone else believes that the organization will look like. So I strongly suggest anyone that's listening who is really wanting to do something like Daryl's Foundation, like Ellen Foundation, is to just continue to, you know, press through and just be encouraged through. You have anything else you want to add on to that, Daryl?
You know, anybody, like, I'm going to leave my number, anybody that wants to help to do this. I mean, but like I said, it got to be, it's a process. It ain't,
yeah.
you know, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, God drawing me into this. I just went to make T-shirts, and then from making T-shirts, I started doing speeches. And from doing speeches in other places, I mean, I still choke up. Sometimes I feel like I didn't do a good job, but what I did was never gave up. I never
yeah.
gave up because I want my son's legacy
to
continue.
On.
He did not have to die like this.
Yeah.
And some people, you meet parents, Pam, that are nasty. You can meet some family members who have lost kids, and they're angry. They
mm-hmm.
angry. They don't even deal with the people. I have met mothers in this arena. We call it arena, a family who is in the club that never asked to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from your child. I have met families that collided with each other. Wait a minute. She lost her son. You lost her son. I don't like, you know, they just, some people, this pain and grief can go in any direction with them if they cannot contain it.
Right.
And I contain mine by the word of God. Some of them nasty. Some, like I said, the mother shot the boy who shot her son, and she says, I'll do it again.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, how you carry it. And then real quick, I met a guy. Now, I was working with T&I. T&I is in Upper Marlboro, Transform a Neighborhood Initiative. And they just do things in neighborhoods to clean it up, to fight gun violence and things. And I was doing an interview with a man, and he was telling me about what the T&I did for his neighborhood in Landover. And then he told me that his son was stabbed and killed. But he said he never told nobody this story. He don't share. And I happened to get this interview on camera.
Mm.
And I was like, wow. So, you know, it's how they feel inside. Like you said, we don't want to never discourage no one. But some people just don't. Some people can't do it. Some people not ready to do it. I met a mother lost her son 15 years ago. And she said, I want to do it, but I cry too much and I cuss too much. That's understandable. You
it
can
happens.
Express yourself. You
That's
can express
right.
yourself. All I can do is tell my viewers, hey, this is what's going to come, but it's her pain. And I tell the mayor, I tell the chief of police, I tell everybody who I talk about, do not take my aggressiveness as disrespectful. It was my son. It was my pain. It was my grief. So sometimes I can come off a little harsh, but I mean no harm. because some people really don't care. I went to a county council meeting to talk about getting grant money from them, and everybody who went up talked about a dance school, STA classes, opera school, and they was like, yeah. And I came up and talked about gun violence, and you could hear a pin drop in the room. No one had nothing to say.
They don't want to address what the serious issues are.
Yep.
You know, so and that's why I'm glad we have organizations like yours and your show to address these issues. So, Gail, let me share with people how they can get in touch with you if they want to continue the conversation or just have questions about, you know, how they can heal, how they can start to heal from this. How can they reach out to you?
Okay, right now, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook as Daryl Harrison. Just Daryl Harrison, DarrylHarrison. Just Daryl Harrison. Sometimes I'm filled to capacity, but also if you want to reach me on Instagram, I'm on Instagram as the number 2 dot Daryl. The number 2 dot Daryl, and that's me on Instagram if you want to reach me on that one. My phone number is 202-361-3466. Also, at this time, my show is on YouTube under Vox Wave Live, and that's VoxWaveLive. And you just type in Vox Wave on YouTube. My radio show is every Friday from 3 o'clock to 4:30. My website, I've been going through changes with my website, but it's Daryl A. Harrison CDF.com. Daryl A. Harrison CDF.org. The .com I had before, I lost it, and now somebody's trying to sell it back to me. So it's Daryl A.
You
Harrison.
Never know. You never know.
Yeah, Daryl A. Harrison, CBF.com. Contact me if you need any assistance. I can try to help you with counseling, therapy, just to have some company in your life that's going through what you're going through. The
mm-hmm.
process is never easy. It's hard. I mean, I'm with the emotions just telling the story now, but it ain't something I was told, Pam, that a mother who lost a kid said it ain't something that you get over.
No.
It's something that you get used to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I just want to give them. It ain't something we get over. It's something that you get used to. And while we're sitting here, Pam, not to share, my wife just sent me 12 pictures of little Daryl when he was a kid that her mother just found. And I'm like, no,
wow.
But, you know, I was choked up for a minute, but I'm just here to help people. That's what I came to do. And I did this in 2017, when the boy was sentenced for killing, I think it was 2018. Yeah, it was 2017. The boy was sentenced on October 20th, and Channel 9 interviewed me. And I told Channel 9 at that time, I want to be the voice for those who can't talk. I want to help those that need help who got killed. And because of the grace of God, I'm doing it 4 years later.
And that's a blessing, and I know the story was hard, but you know, as no stranger to my show, that I always believe that everyone's got a story that will help someone heal, and that also opens out to why you do what you do in the community and just helping others. So, family, again, thank you so much for tuning in, but just want to remind you, you know, the importance of being aware of gun violence in our community. And, you know what, Gerald, before I shared the tail end of our of the show, do you know if someone is looking to write in, how can someone write in against gun violence or talk about gun violence reform? Do you know where they can go to reach out?
I have a couple of people in mind. They can call me. I've been reaching out because I want to do a in D.C. I have Mike Austin in there. He wanted to help write Leather.
That's all right.
He helped people write reform about gun violence. In Maryland, I've been trying to put a law out called the Darrell Harrison Law. And what it is that it was, you know, the video from the store is what convicted the guy. He's on video. And, you know, we went to court October the 20th on Friday. On that Tuesday, everybody was calling me, telling me that the shooting was on the TV. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And the video that was in the store was given to the news media of my son being shot. And, you know, I called the news media, and they were like, well, you know, Mr. Harrison is only 12 seconds. It's not really showing Darrell getting shot. But I never got to look at the video because I didn't want to see my son last moment. But,
right,
you know,
right.
He told me how when the gun went off in the store, you could see their faces. You know, Darrell turned around looking like, what the world? You know what I'm saying? But he got killed that night. And I just asked the TV station to take it down, and I feel as though there should be a law saying that ask the family first. I mean, I know that they say is what they say is public record.
Yeah, public record.
Ask the family, do they want this on TV?
Just be respectful. You know,
be
respectful.
That's what I've been working on, and I do have people that I've been reaching out to help. But I'm also just trying to grow. I'm trying to receive grants to help others. Because remember, with my foundation, I feed homeless, I clothe the homeless.
Right.
And I help people. I help teenagers get jobs. I do boys segments. They help young boys find a job. So I just want to continue to grow and encourage people out there to support me and do what they can with our foundation, and so we can continue to help others that cannot do it.
Right. And that's important. In order for the work to get done, you know, we have to seek out the help from our local family, and so they can reach out to that. Daryl, can you hear me okay? I got a lot of feedback.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was getting quite a bit of feedback there. So, family, thank you so much for continuing to join Ellen Foundation's Unheard Voices. Daryl, I really appreciate you for sharing your story and taking time and then just getting through our little technical difficulties, but I believe that God has a purpose for everything, and I believe that this has been such a phenomenal conversation on, you know, the importance of how gun violence affects our communities, and not just by one person. One shot can affect numerous people. So, family, if you know of anyone that is in need of help, and I know we got a lot of stuff going on with the police, but number one, please dial 911 to get someone out there to help you. That's really important. Feel free to reach out to Daryl, or as always, you can feel free to reach out to Ellen Foundation, to myself. And let me just give you the call letters again for social media. On Twitter and Instagram, it's Ellen Foundation 1. For Facebook, it's Life Ministry Foundation. Please feel free to email me if you have any questions at info@thelmfoundation.org. And visit our website, which is www.thelmfoundation.org. Family, if you're in the DMV area, come on out. August 29th, Mr. Harrison, Mr. Darrell's going to be one of our speakers at our men's conference, and I'm truly excited to have him be a part of this piece because, number one, it's going to be on my birthday, and I know he's going to bring such a phenomenal word with some other phenomenal kings that are going to be joining the platform with him. Daryl, again, God bless you. Thank you so much for taking time out. Please tell Tina I said hello. And
before we go, I just want to say I want to thank you. Since you came into my life, since I met you, you have been awesome. You have been amazing. You helped me to become more of what I'm doing today. Your word of encouragement, just your knowledge of things that you do. I just want to say thank you. I thank God for you and your spirit that you brought into my life.
Oh, you don't have me up here crying on the air.
Don't cry on the air.
I know. I do appreciate you and your family, and I just want to continue to encourage you through your journey, because this journey is not for the faint of heart. So I want to speak a blessing over you and your family. And I thank you that God has allowed to join. So God bless you, family. We'll catch you tomorrow morning for our Start Your Morning Off Right. We do a little prayer line in the morning, Daryl, so you always can join in at 7:30. So, family, take care of yourself. God bless you. I'll talk to you in the morning. Daryl, we'll connect soon. Family, thank you for joining.
Yeah, I'll call you later on to get a copy of this.
We'll talk soon. God bless you all. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.